9 o'clock. Thanks for joining us. Jim along with Cake today from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios. The most trusted name in automobiles. Thoughts on the Avs loss last night. Maverick baseball team with a outstanding win. Timely hitting. Really good pitching to be West Texas A&M. We'll talk with Chris Hanks in just a moment. Talk with Nate Porter, Palisade Bulldogs coach last hour. Former Mav, by the way, Nate Porter. Our conversation with Nate Porter was brought to you by the Rick Nelson Agency and American Family Insurance. For a free comparison, call this team of licensed professionals at 970-241-0078. Do we ever get a winner for Where in the World is Tyler Franzen?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the contest.
It's another winner on the Team Sports Network.
Congratulations to Jarrett for getting a case of beer today, correctly answering Pebble Beach. Pebble Beach was where Tyler Franzen, well, imaginary Tyler Franzen was. Real Tyler Franzen would love to go to Pebble Beach one day.
Include me in on that whole thing.
We'll get the plane tickets now.
we'll make it. Give me a couple of weeks here, though, okay? A couple of weeks here.
It might be a while.
All right, it's time to talk Maverick baseball here in the 9 o'clock hour on the Jim Davis Show.
Talking CMU baseball with Mav skipper Chris Hanks on the team.
All right, Mavericks coming off the opening win in South Central Region play over West Texas A&M last night. The skipper Chris Hanks joins us. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Doing good, Jim. Thank you.
Outstanding win by your team last night. Boy, Cannon Handy set the tempo, did he not? He retired the first 9 batters that he faced. And did run into some trouble late in the game where he walked 3, ended up coming back to haunt you guys a little bit with the pinch hit 2 RBI single from their the guy ended up playing center field for them, the Whitman kid. But I thought Cannon did a great job of really, like I said, setting the tone for that game last night.
Yeah, he gave us exactly what we needed. In these tournaments, you really want your starters to get deep into the game to preserve the bullpen, and he did that, and he had great command early, and he controlled the game from the mound. And when you get that good pitching, it takes a little pressure off the offense, and we got enough timely hits. We left a lot of runners on again. I think we could have extended that and made it a little more comfortable, but nonetheless, Cooper Vasquez was just outstanding coming in relief behind Cannon.
Well, that gives you a nice 1-2 punch, doesn't it, for you and Jeff, with Gage Edwards coming in to close out games in inning 2, and Cooper Vasquez has just been really outstanding during down the stretch here.
He has, and Cooper's a good starter, too, but as we progressed, as you mentioned, he's really shown a knack to come in out of the bullpen and be lights out. So real happy with that. And in the process, I think we kept him around 30 pitches, which is key for bouncing back and possibly being able to pitch again today.
From an offensive standpoint, Hayden McGeary with his 30th home run of the season, the back-to-back region player of the year, Hayden with a couple of hits last night. I thought Spencer Bramwell, that opposite field base hit, did a nice job had a couple of hits last night and drove in a run. One of those timely hits that you really needed last night early on in that baseball game came from Spencer Bramwell.
Yeah, Spencer's had a good back half of the season at the plate. And, last night really wasn't any different. So if we can keep that middle of the order going and get guys on, we have a chance to score some runs.
Chris Hanks, the head coach of the CMU Mavericks baseball team, joining us on the Team Sports Network. And Caleb Farmer had a base hit last night, scored a run. But I thought where Caleb really contributed was the job he did defensively at third base. He had a sensational, did a sensational job last night, Chris, on a couple of hard-hit balls where tough plays near the line, did a great job defensively at the hot corner.
Yeah, right out of the gates, he made a play to prevent them from, leading off the game with a double. And then late in the game, in the ninth, that leadoff hitter, he saved the base hit to left and threw him out at first, because in the ninth we have a 2-run lead. They get that leadoff runner on. Now it starts to get a little hairy, and, you know, one swing of the bat and you got a tie game.
I thought one of the keys last night too was really putting the clamps down on Adam Becker, the nation's RBI leader, Lone Star Conference Player of the Year. He got punched out a couple of times last night. He went 0-for-4. Keeping him from doing any damage, I think, was really critical last night.
It was. He was a kid we were very concerned about going into the game. You know, he had 7 home runs last weekend alone in their conference tournament and down in Angelo. And we controlled him last night, so that was good. He didn't get a chance to drive anybody in or really hurt us.
So now it's St. Edward's. They picked up the 16-5 win over West Texas A&M to open up the regional yesterday. Wesley Gafford, who was the Lone Star Conference Pitcher of the Year, pitched really well for them, 6 2/3 to get the victory. So now it's St. Edward's, and like you said last night, Chris, after the game, that's now a best 2 out of 3 with you and the Hilltoppers.
It is. We'll play at 3 o'clock today, followed by a 7 p.m. game. And, you know, if tomorrow is needed, there'll be a single game on Saturday at, I think, 1 o'clock.
So when you had a chance, I know, to probably watch them a little bit yesterday, what was your takeaway in your scouting of St. Edward's?
Well, you know, they're a very physical group. They're very athletic. They pitch it well. And right now, late in the year, they're really swinging the bats well. So, you know, we'll have our hands full. They run the bases a little better than West Texas. They try to run more. So defending the running game will be more of an issue than it, you know, was going to be against West Texas. West Texas just really doesn't try to steal bases or run. St. Edward's is a little different in that regard. So it adds a dimension that we have to defend. And, you know, late in the year, it's championship baseball. We're going to need our, you know, best performances from our players.
Who do you expect to see for them today? Of course, Gafford pitched yesterday. Luke Short, the lefty, potentially, might be the guy that you see today?
Yeah, I think it might be Short. But, you know, as we've done the scouting, they've moved things around just a little bit. So that's what we would expect. But we try not to get too caught up in, you know, who we're going to face. I think what's most important is our players' discipline at the plate, swinging at the right pitches, particularly early in counts, which at times we have difficulty with. You know, not getting yourself out. But I think Short, the lefty, would be a good prospect for us to see. High-level potential there. And we'll just get ready to go.
Now, you said after the game last night, it's going to be Ryan Day. I imagine that no deviation from that course is going to be Ryan Day in that first game today.
Yeah, you know, Ryan's a veteran. He's pitched in big games. He's a dependable kid, a dependable person. And so we're going to go with him today. And then, you know, we'll have Henderson out of the bullpen. We have a fresh bullpen at this point. And even Cooper Vasquez will be probably available.
And yesterday, the South Central Region, all-region team came out. Hayden McGeary, back-to-back region player of the year. No big surprise there. But your team well-represented. Spencer Bramwell making the first team. You had Caleb Farmer, Chase Hamilton, and Cannon Handy making the second team. So your Mavericks well-represented in that South Central all-tournament or the all-region team.
Yeah, you know, we don't get too caught up in that, but I was surprised with Farmer being second team. I didn't see the first team, so I don't know who was the first teamer, but I don't know that I agree with that one.
And I'm with you on that one, particularly the way Caleb played defense last night, no doubt about that. Hey, Chris, I appreciate the time. We'll have the game today on the team. I'll be out there with Ray McLennan for the first game, and then Rio Van Gilder and Vern McGee for the second game today. Mavericks square off against St. Edward's pregame at 2:45 today. First pitch at 3 from Bergman. Chris, always appreciate it. See you at the ballpark.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. Chris Hanks, the head coach of the Colorado Mesa Mavericks baseball team, the number 17 team in the nation.
And red hot after last night with how good, again, it can't be overstated, how good Cannon Handy gave them last night. And, of course, Hayden McGeary.
Well, what you know, Cannon goes 6 1/3 last night, and they didn't have to go to the bullpen other than Cooper Vasquez, who gives him a little Goose Gossage longish relief effort last night, 2 2/3 last night. And I just thought, boy, Cannon Handy just set the tempo last night, set down 9 consecutive Buffalo's batters, and you just got that, I know what Chris is saying, though. There were opportunities there. They had a, right. They tried to bunt to get a runner on. Bunt got popped up, caught by the pitcher, and it turned into a double play. That was late in the game. They were trying to, add to that 2-run lead. And so it, one of those moments where the execution wasn't there for the Mavericks last night with their short game, but Hayden McGeary, who, continues his incredible season with his 30th home run, the big blast to left field last night for the Mavericks. And Chase Hamilton had a really solid game, 3 for 4, drove in a run, scored a couple of runs last night as well. Caleb Farmer scoring a run last night, and said defensively, can't say enough about the job that he did last night. And Jordan Stubbings with an RBI and a couple of base hits last night for the Mavericks. So Mavericks also went into a couple of double plays last night, which erased some scoring opportunities as well. But Mavericks getting the win last night, 5-3 over West Texas A&M. Once again, on the team today, pregame at 2:45, first pitch at 3 o'clock. The Mavericks and St. Edward's, a best 2 out of 3 now to move on to the Super Regional. All right, 9-11. Jim along with Cake today from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Let's see. I beg your pardon. Brett Favre did what?
Robert.
So, Robert, we talked about this at great length the other day, but I'll give you the shortened version of it. The Cliff Notes. Brett Favre was contracted by this group in the state of Mississippi. That was a group that was promoting programs for basically the impoverished of the state of Mississippi.
People in poverty in Mississippi,
right.
Which, let's be perfectly clear, there's a lot of people impoverished in Mississippi. It's one of the poorest states in the U.S.
One of the poorest states in the country. And so Brett Favre was asked by this group to do speaking engagements, things like that, to bring awareness to those that are in poverty in the state of Mississippi. Well, he never did speak at any of these events that he supposedly was contracted to speak at. He did pay back the $1.5 million because he was forced to pay it back.
Not out of the goodness of his heart.
Not that he wanted to, but he did. And so Brett Favre also, with this group, he solicited funds for a company that's coming up with like an anti-concussion medication, or a medication that deals with concussions.
Okay.
And he asked this group that was involved in trying to help those that are in poverty in the state of Mississippi, asked them to invest in it.
After he had already dumped them for their speaking events.
Now, keep in mind, this was not a private group. This is a group. This is through the state of Mississippi using welfare funds intended to alleviate poverty. And Nancy New was the nonprofit director who had access to these welfare funds. State dollars, by the way. Probably some federal, I'm sure. John Davis, no relation, the disgraced former director of Mississippi Department of Human Services, allocated the money in the first place, including $68 million in federal welfare money from the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program. And so what Favre did was he asked for money for his company he was investing in for the concussion treatment that this company was developing, that they used this money to invest in that. He also got money from them to build a new volleyball arena at Southern Mississippi, his alma mater. Guess whose daughter plays volleyball at Southern Mississippi?
I'm going to take a shot in the dark here and say that would be one old Brett Favre.
That would be Brett Favre.
Brett Favre.
So not only did Brett Favre back in the day, while married, send naughty photos of himself to Jim Sturger.
That's one way to put it.
Who ended up It was covered the Jets at that time when he was playing for the Jets. She was a reporter, and he sent her nude photographs of a particular part of his body.
These were not tasteful.
They were not. It was not.
It was not for a calendar.
Not tasteful photography. And this is while Brett Favre was married.
And now, he was still in the NFL.
And he also, now in his retired days when he's not playing flag football with Jerry Rice and Hawking Copperfit, was bilking the state of Mississippi and its residents out of money. For example, got $5 million for the volleyball facility at Southern Miss. Hattiesburg, by the way, college town where Southern Miss is, it has one of the highest poverty rates in the state. And so instead of using the money to help the poor folks in the state of Mississippi, those that are dealing with poverty,
need it.
He used that money to go build a new volleyball facility. And so he did that. Then he went back to Davis Anew when Prevacus, it was a startup drug company specializing in concussion treatment. He did invest $1 million of his own money. So at least he did put some skin in the game, so to speak.
He tried to get the
NFL to invest. They said no. And so Favre and his business partner turned to Governor Phil Bryant for helping get Prevacus off the ground quickly. That's when Prevacus founder Jake Van Landingham, is reported by Mississippi Today, the text Nancy New and include me if you want, and basically ask her if she can help with investors, grants, or any other way possible. She has strong connections. She gave me $5 million for the volleyball facility via grant money. Offer her whatever you feel like. That's from Brett Favre. So there you go. Robert, that's the deal with Brett Favre.
And also, just to address a couple more things in Robert's text. First of all, that's not how you spell my last name. I am not Francis. I know. Lighten up, Francis. And second of all, you had a text earlier from before. The Mets, second highest payroll in MLB. If the Mets sweep the Rockies, will the team be convinced that money will bring a World Series to Colorado? The answer is no, and here's why. Number one, the last time the New York Metropolitans won the World Series, 1986. Second of all, second highest payroll, not a winning team make. Last time the Mets won a division title, 2015. Last time they made the playoffs, 2016. Now, injuries don't help, and lack of production and some questionable batting and pitching don't help either. But isn't that what you pay for? Isn't that what you pay your team to do? So,
just thinking, Robert, once again. Highest paid doesn't mean you win. That formula has been proven not to be successful, by and large. That you can throw lots of money at it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to win a championship. You're going to win a World Series. Mets are playing great right now. Of course, get Scherzer out now for 6 to 8 weeks, and that does not help.
No.
All right, 919, Casey Underwood's a coach of Snead State, Alabama. They're coming to JUCO for the first time in school history. We'll talk with them next on The Jim Davis Show.
Stay by the radio.
You're listening to The Jim Davis Show on The Team, 101 FM, 1340 AM, Grand Junction. It's time to talk Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series on The Team.
With us on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, he's bringing his ball club to the Junior College World Series for the first time in school history. He is the head coach at Snead State, Alabama. And Casey Underwood joins us right now. Casey, thanks for coming on. A pleasure to talk with you this morning.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. We appreciate it.
Take us through what this feeling is like for your ball club, for you and your team to come to Grand Junction for the first time in program history.
It's an absolute amazing, amazing feeling. I can't thank the people in Grand Junction. I know we haven't even been there. And just this process since Tuesday of winning the state championship, how many phone calls we've had that have reached out from Grand Junction and the town of all the stuff. We are looking so forward to it. It's amazing. I was a walk-on here at Sneed State Community College in 2004. My head coach hired me as his assistant, and now he's my assistant, and we've been together ever since. And to be able to win a championship with him next to me, Coach Gary Ledbetter, is an absolute awesome thing.
Casey Underwood, the coach of the Parsons of Sneed State Community College, joining us. And Casey, kind of take us through winning the South District title, because you faced some really good ball clubs. Obviously, Wallace Dothan Community College, really good program, but you get the victory against them, 14-3, to win your first ever Alabama Community College Conference tournament title and capture the South District title as well. That you faced a pretty good ball club in that Wallace Dothan crew, and Coastal Alabama North was in that mix as well, Lawson State. So kind of take us through the run that you had through the Alabama State tournament.
Man, it was it's a special thing, because that tournament's a tough tournament to win. It doesn't matter how good you are when you come in it. You got to have some things and some breaks go your way. And we were blessed to stay healthy and really, really pitch the ball the first couple of days, and the ball wouldn't go anywhere. And then we were able to rely on our offense after that. And it was really fun to see, you know, Wallace Dothan, what a great program with Mackie Sasser, you know, good coach. And Lawson State with the great Blake Lewis, great friend of mine, and what he's done with that program, now taking over. He's going to be the athletic director at Gadsden State. And, of course, Kenny DuPont, who comes from Mississippi Junior College, the legend himself, and to be able to beat those guys and his team, the hard-nosed bunch that they are. So it was an absolute grind. The guys got after it. Really, it was our first – it was actually our second time playing a nine-inning game in the first game that we played against Coastal. So it was interesting to see how we were gonna match up with that, how our pen was going to work. And, man, we were lucky to really get through it and have some really good starting pitching with our guys.
Sneed State head coach Casey Underwood joining us today on the Team Sports Network. Tristan Todorowski was the most valuable player of the tournament for you. Gave up just 5 hits and 2 runs over eight innings. Had 4 strikeouts. Tristan pitched really well for you to help get you to Grand Junction.
Yes, sir. He actually pitched Game 1 for us as well. And, you know, he gave us everything he got. Tristan's a special piece to our program. Not only is he a great player, but his family is very near and dear to us. His brother also pitched here. His brother was part of the building foundation of coming through here. And to have Billy, his brother, and remember when Tristan was 12, 13 years old, catching fly balls and batting practice when he'd come to visit his brother at practice and watch us, and now to be able to watch Tristan go out there and win Game 1 and then win the state championship for us on the mound is it's a special story. And that's who we are. We're a junior college, small-knit, close group, close family. And you know, family is a big word for us, and that's a proven point right there. But Tristan is a heck of a young man. He's going to go play at Southeastern Louisiana, and they're getting him a bulldog on the mound, I can tell you that.
Looking forward to seeing him on the bump out here at Sam Saplesio Field. Casey Underwood, the coach of Sneed State Alabama, with us today on the Team Sports Network. You've got some really good guys in your lineup. Carter Frederick, who has 52 RBIs this season, leads you with 11 home runs. Jaron Wright also has 52 ribbies on the season. Those two have kind of helped to lead the way in terms of when guys have been on board, they've been productive at the plate for you.
Yes, sir, they have. Carter Frederick had a phenomenal tournament. I think he batted .409 in the entire tournament. One of the games he hit for the cycle. He ended up with 4 home runs on the tournament. He just caught fire, and it was great to see. The kid has been through a lot. There's been a lot of adversity. He's a transfer. Came back down, and now the thing and the sky's the limit for him. So, yes, Jaron Wright came to us. Center fielder, he hits to the middle of our lineup, and man, he is just—he's a hit machine when there's a guy on second base, and the guy always finds some way somehow to get that clutch 2-out RBI that just extends an inning or allows us to win a big game. I can't say enough about Jared and how much it means to our program as well.
K Casey Underwood, coach of the Parsons of Snead State, Alabama, with us today on the Team Sports Network. We talked about Tristan Todorowski and the year that he's had for and what he did, obviously, to get you to Grand Junction on the bump. But Luke Lyons had a really good season on the mound for you as well, 9-1 record. Jeb Bartles picked up 7 wins this year. So some really reliable arms you can count on when you come out to Grand Junction.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. They these guys have really put it in. I've got our coaching staff has done a really good job of getting these guys. Tristan is a sophomore, and everybody else is pretty much younger. And we've got a young bunch underneath that. And, you know, Luke being a redshirt freshman and Jeb being a true freshman, it's really good to see those guys. Our coaching staff is I can't thank them enough for how well they had our team prepared to step on the field in every game. Coach Andrew Porch, Coach Cameron Furr, Coach Gary Ledbetter, those guys, it made my job a lot easier. I was able to sit back and watch a game where those guys really worked their tails off to not just get our guys prepared and ready to go through the season, but the stuff that they put in for the tournament was just second to none.
Snead State, Alabama coach Casey Underwood with us today on the Team Sports Network. So how much do you know about playing out here, Casey? I imagine probably you've got friends in the fraternity that you can tap into that. Maybe an Adam Thomas previous, you know, Chat Valley. They've been out here when Adam was the head coach there. Who do you kind of go to get a sense of what it's like to play in the Junior College World Series in Grand Junction?
Well, Adam Thomas is one of them, and Adam's a close friend of ours. He's reached out. He's actually going to come talk to the team on Monday, kind of let those guys know prepare-wise of going. Bobby Sproul at Shelton State Community College, he's been a guy I've looked up to ever since I've gotten here, and I try to do a lot of our things here at this program to be as good as Shelton State, and there's no doubt about it. And the way he runs his program, the way he does things, Brett Kimbrell, he's now at East Mississippi. He was a longtime assistant with Bobby. And, man, those three guys, I couldn't do it without them. I also have a guy, Coach Steve Helms, and he's really helped us, and I can't thank them enough of being able to come. And Bobby telling us from the charter buses to the planes of how to get there, and Adam telling us what to prepare for on the field and the excitement of how the field plays and how the air is and getting acclimated. So it is it's really, really exciting, and we're looking forward to every minute of it.
And two of the finest gentlemen we know, in Bobby Sproul and Adam Thomas. Those guys are just, when they've been out here, they just have always been the best. And Bobby Sproul, I mean, going back to the story, spring training when he was in the big leagues and getting shot and through the room, the wall in the room. And Adam carrying
it's amazing,
his,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's an incredible story. And Adam carrying his player off the field at the Junior College World Series. So, Casey, hopefully none of you guys get hurt. We don't want that to happen.
No, sir. I'm not as strong as Adam either. Now,
okay.
I'm a big guy, but I'm a chunky guy. I like to eat. Adam, he likes to lift. He's a strong guy. He's able to carry him out. I'd rather be eating, and Adam rather be lifting. So, but no, I can't thank Bobby Sproul enough of everything that he's done as a veteran coach. When I came in, not only as an assistant, to treat me with the respect. There's not a lot of guys around that give the assistants much respect, and I've worked my way to being a head coach here, and coach has been the guy that three times a day, four times a day, it doesn't matter when the phone call is, he's calling me, I'm calling him, and we're going to pick up and bounce some things off of each other. And yes, we do compete against each other throughout the year, we're in the same conference, but man, what to have mentors like that and to have guys like Adam Thomas that not only respect the game but respect their fellow coaches. And it's an absolute honor to be able to call them friends and not just mentors.
Well, we've always enjoyed when Bobby's been out here with Shelton State, and of course Adam with Chat Valley. They've always come out and represented the state of Alabama extremely well. I'm like you, Casey, in that regard. I think I'd rather eat than try to pick up one of my guys and carry him off the field. We'll leave the heavy lifting to Adam Thomas to do
that. That's exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll sit back and enjoy some ribs and a beer or something. We can just do that.
That's
instead
exactly
of watch
right.
And Adam can go do that, and we'll watch him do that. Hey, Casey, I appreciate it. Congratulations. I know this has to be a real thrill. It's also a whirlwind right now of all the preparation to the travel to get out here to Grand Junction, but I think you're going to have a wonderful time out here with your ball club. Look forward to seeing your team on the field and meeting you for the first time. I appreciate it, and have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you out here next week.
Yes, sir, and thank you for what you do for these kids, man. This is once-in-a-lifetime experience, and again, we haven't been there, but I can just tell you what a first-class event this is going to be with everything that from going all the way, leading all the way up to this. I've not met any of you, but I can't wait to shake your hand and tell you thank every one of you for how support and everything that you've been there just for these kids, and that's what it's all about, and to give them a first-class experience. And we're looking forward to it, and hopefully we can go out there on the field and represent the state of Alabama pretty well.
Well, Casey, you and your fellow coaches, you guys have the hard job. I mean, it's you're mentoring young men, molding young men to be more than just baseball players, really good human beings. And so you guys are the ones that really do the hard job, but it's for the rest of us, it's a labor of love out here doing this thing. Casey, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Yes, sir. You as well. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Casey Underwood, coach at Snead State, Alabama.
I sympathize with the I'd rather be eating than lifting. I know that feeling all too well.
And just having Adam did that, it was just you're just going, he's just going to carry him off the field. And it wasn't like he was like our little sales guy, JJ, where, heck, I could pick him up and pack him off the field.
Right.
I mean, kid was like 6'2", probably 215-ish.
He's a baseball player.
You know, he's a big kid, and he had his ankle injury, and Adam just swoops down, picks him up, and carries him from right field to the third base dugout. Not the first base dugout.
The third.
He carried him all the way to the dugout.
This is a slightly unrelated. Did you ever see Patton Oswalt's stand-up bit where he talked about seeing the power lifter for the first time?
No.
So it was around Christmas time, and he's getting out of a bar, and it's in this part of San Francisco where all the bars are letting out all at once, and there's this conglomerate of people, and two guys get into a little bit of a scrape. Well, the one guy is this like 5'6" roly-poly, you know, kind of round looking dude, and this other guy is this tall kind of Middle Eastern looking fellow, bumps into the short guy and is like, hey, watch it, man. No, you watch it. And the taller guy tries to punch the little roly-poly fella, and the roly-poly guy just picks the guy off the ground with little to no effort and then just drops him. And Patton Oswalt's standing there watching this whole thing unfold, and he's like, oh my God, that guy lit the tall guy's, you know, 6'3", whatever.
Big guy, yeah.
Big guy, and then here's this little fella, kind of rotund, and then, oh, he's a power lifter.
Yeah.
He's got like a neck and a bicep. That's it.
Very deceptive.
Yeah. It was. If you get a chance, watch the clip on YouTube. It's pretty funny.
All right, 9:36. Appreciate the conversation with Casey Underwood today. Still time to text in. Got some thoughts about the Avs loss last night. 4-1. They fall to the Blues. We'll have tomorrow's game here on the team with pregame at 5:30. So make sure you tune in to Connor McGahee tomorrow for that. Update on the PGA Championship. Right now, if my computer will... There we go. Thank you very much.
There we go.
Justin Thomas, Joaquin Niemann, Will Zalatoris, Tom Hoge, all 4-under right now. McIlroy still at 5-under. Rory tees off this afternoon. All right, 9:37, and it's time for...
That's the story of the greatest sport moment in all of history.
It's time to take a trip back in time. It's This Day in Sports History.
Back in time. All right, we go back to 1900. The second modern Olympic Games begin in Paris, France.
Wow.
1919, Babe Ruth hits his first career Grand Slam. Babe Ruth wins a game on the mound and at the plate. Hits his first career Grand Slam to beat the St. Louis Browns 6-4 as a member of the Boston Red Sox.
Aha!
1972, BBB, a 19-1 long shot, wins a Preakness Stakes by 1.5 lengths. Also on this day, 1978, Affirmed, written by Steve Cawthon, wins the Preakness Stakes by a neck. 2005, Kyle Busch becomes the youngest winner in the Craftsman Truck Series history. Busch holds off Terry Cook and Ted Musgrave in a three-lap closing sprint at the Quaker Steak and Lube 200. Also in the state, 2006, Kentucky Derby winner Barbaro breaks down early in the Preakness. Barbaro galloping a few hundred yards while his eight rivals pass him, injured his leg in that race. Also, Roger Federer in 2007 ends Rafael Nadal's 81-match winning streak on clay. And that wraps up this day in sports history. All right, 9:38. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Some garbage time. Get some of your text as well on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, 970-242-1340.
Touchdown every morning.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
Welcome back, 9:42. Jim along with Cake today from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios. Most trusted name in automobiles. Got a score update on the Delta Panthers, Bennett Tigers regional game.
All right.
Panthers up 1-0.
Nice.
A game started 42 minutes ago. So the Panthers up 1-0. And currently, let's see which inning we're in. I'm trying to figure that out, which inning they're in, but they're up 1-0 right now. So best of luck to Steve Reier and the Panthers taking on Bennett over in Sterling this morning. All right, 9:43. Quick programming note: we'll have Maverick baseball 3:00 today. Well, cloudy right now, but expect it to get a little bit nicer as the day progresses. 3:00, Mavericks and St. Edwards, and then they'll play again at 7:00 tonight. Pre-game at 2:45 today for that first one. I'll have it along with Ray McLennan. Then Rio will be joined by Vern McGee for the second game. If the Mavericks win both, then they're the regional champion of their side of the South Central Region bracket, and they'd move on to the Super Regional. If they lose a game, they would play tomorrow at 1:00, which you and I will have Cake
right
from Bergman Field tomorrow. Now, if not, we'll have Palisade State Tournament regional baseball tomorrow. If the plan is this, okay, it's
a convoluted plan, but it's a plan nonetheless.
It's a plan that is very fluid right now. That if the Mavericks don't play at 1 tomorrow, we'll have coverage Palisade Aurora Central at 12:30 tomorrow, and then hopefully the championship game at 3:00. If the Mavericks play at 1 tomorrow, we will join the Palisade championship game. If the Bulldogs get to the championship game in progress, and then the Avalanche will be on the air with pregame at 5:30. So that's the plan right now. I said it's a very, very fluid plan this morning.
So again, for those of you not paying attention, if the Mavericks do not have to play Saturday, we will have hopefully both Palisade games Saturday. And if the Mavericks do play on Saturday, we will join in progress the Palisade, hopefully, championship game
right
on Saturday if they get that far.
All right. And so, once again, Delta up 1-0 over Bennett in their regional game over in Sterling. Quick update on the PGA Championship leaderboard this morning. Mentioned Rory McIlroy's at 5-under. Doesn't tee off until this afternoon. Justin Thomas, Joaquin Niemann, Will Zalatoris, Tom Hoge, all 4-under right now out in Oklahoma. All right, 9:45. Let's go ahead and let's just hop in, wallow around.
Do a little digging.
A little digging while some text as well. It's garbage time.
We're taking out the trash. It's garbage time on the Jim Davis Show on The Team.
Oh, I love trash.
All right, Cake, would you like to lead it off here?
Sure. Did you guys get a chance at all yesterday to talk about Joel Embiid?
No, we did not.
Oh, well, this one goes out to all of the cranky boomers that are all, hey, you kids and your participation trophies. Well, yesterday, the city of Philadelphia, in an effort to maybe put a little bit of cream on the burn wound that is Joel Embiid's ego not winning the Most Valuable Player award for the NBA. That award, of course, going to one Sombor's finest, Nikola Jokic. So the Philadelphia City Council, at a meeting, voted to name Joel Embiid their MVP, the Most Valuable Philadelphian.
Oh, brother.
I said the same thing.
Wah.
First of all, this is completely disregarding Billy Penn, Rocky, Nick Foles, I'm sure Bryce
Mike
Harper's.
Mike Schmidt,
I'm sure.
Dr. J,
I mean, I'm sure Bryce Harper is not happy about this. Although, you know, yeah, he's good. So, you know, again, I mean, Benjamin Franklin, Kite and Key. That, you're going to tell me that Joel Embiid, who, again, did not win the NBA MVP award this year.
Bobby Clark.
Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart's a Philly guy. You're going to tell me that all of those people are not nearly as valuable to the city of Philadelphia. Donovan McNabb, Andy Reid, Brian Dawkins. You're gonna tell me that's
your, I guess, what, for this year? They're going to have it every year?
You got to now.
Well, you have to.
And I'm not saying Joel Embiid doesn't do stuff for the city of Philadelphia. Maybe he helps go around, you know, in disguise and goes to soup kitchens or something. I don't know. All I know is if you're going to call someone your MVP, your Most Valuable Philadelphian, simply to appease the ego of a man who, again, did not win the MVP this year in the NBA. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Oh, well, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's a terrible look. And number two, I think, again,
wow,
it's all of the, I mean, the Continental Congress was founded in Philadelphia.
Rocky. Ron Jaworski.
Jaws.
On the same note here, recently Celtics forward Jason Tatum complained about the media not voting for him for All-NBA last year because he would have got a Supermax salary if they did. Well, he cried about the lack of criteria for things like games played and awards voting. And so NBA Commissioner Adam Silver says there is a minimum number of games now, but I think potentially we should raise that. That the league may raise the number of games played needed to qualify for end-of-the-season results. So, for example, MVP voting this year. Nikola Jokic played in 74 games. Joel Embiid, your most valuable Philadelphian, 68. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 67 games. Devin Booker played 68. Luka Doncic played in 65. Jason Tatum played in 76. Ja Morant, 57, Steph Curry, 64, Chris Paul, 65, DeMar DeRozan, 76, LeBron James, 56, Kevin Durant, 55. So the suggestion is maybe that 70 games needs to be the threshold here, that you've got to play to be the MVP or in the MVP conversation, the voting, you've got to play at least 70 games, which would not have had an impact on Nikola Jokic.
Nope.
What if on Joel Embiid, though? What if on Giannis? What if on Devin Booker?
Yeah.
I mean, there is a point to be made here about, while, yes, performance, that's important. That's an MVP. How they impact their team. How much they contribute to their team's success. But also, don't you have to be available for most of the games played in an 82-game season? I mean, you're LeBron James, you played 56 games. I think there needs to be, and I agree with this, more of incentive for guys to play, because this is the whole load management thing. If you if you want load management to become less of an issue for some of these players, maybe this needs to be part of it. You've got to play at least in 70 games to be in the running for the MVP. And then I imagine for some guys, they might go, maybe sitting out that game in Denver, that game at Sacramento, maybe I can't afford to do that now. It would be a way to push some of the elite players in the league to load management, you know, do less of that and play more basketball games. Something to think about.
Something to think about. Also, you had a updated score for the Delta Panthers. We have an even more updated score from Steve. Delta, 9-0 in the third.
All right. Go Panthers, go. 9-0 over Bennett. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that.
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm looking at, there's a Wikipedia article of, like, important people from the city of Philadelphia. So, first of all, the Fresh Prince himself, Will Smith, when he's not slapping Chris Rock, he was not named the most valuable Philadelphian, although after the Oscars, I think that makes sense. But, like, I mean, come on. Larry of Larry, a.k.a. Larry of the Three Stooges.
Right.
He's a Philadelphian. Patti LaBelle, The Roots. None of them.
No, it's Joel Embiid.
No, it's Joel Embiid.
Yeah, because his feelings got hurt. Let's see. Got another one. Oh, where did it go? I had it. That's what happens when you have too many windows open.
Oh, yeah.
When you do the show and you're looking, scouring for things.
I know the feeling.
And you lost what you were going to talk about.
I know the feeling.
Oh, gosh, I had it. I'm trying to figure out where it went now.
We got a couple of texts if you want me to
go ahead and
to vamp while
go
you
ahead
look
and
for
vamp
it.
While I'm looking for what I'm looking for here.
Mike from Scottsdale today. Happy Apache Friday, muchachos.
Happy Mike.
Rob,
happy Friday, Mike.
Happy Mike.
And hopefully Mike's happy because it is Friday.
Hopefully. Robert's a Yankees fan, so forgive him if Favre's indiscretions seem frivolous. Yankee spending has brought only one championship in the past 20 years. More money, not the easy solution that you represent it to be. Have a great weekend, Pyle.
Thank you, Mike from Scottsdale. It's just not as simple as, let's throw money at it.
No. But
Rockies have spent a lot of money.
Just ask Chris Bryant.
$182 million. Haven't got much return on that investment so far.
Ask the
$75 million on Ian Desmond. How did that work out?
Ask the St. Louis Cardinals how much we gave them to take Nolan Arenado from us.
$50 million to take maybe the greatest player in franchise history, or one of the best, to take him off your hands. J.J. Redick, who's now becoming more and more entrenched in the NBA media world, one of several people who have defended Chris Paul against the criticism that was leveled against Paul this postseason. At one point, Redick did some downplaying the accomplishments of one of the greatest players in the NBA in the league's history. That player did not appreciate it because Redick and Chris Mad Dog Russo, they had a debate on First Take last month about whether Paul should be considered one of the best point guards of all time. Russo said Paul has had too many playoff duds to be placed on the same level as all-time great players like Boston Celtics legend Bob Cousy. Redick strongly disagreed and said Cousy and other players played a much easier era. Bob Cousy couldn't dribble with his left hand. Bob Cousy won championships when there are 8 teams in the league, and you have to win 2 playoff series. Let's celebrate Bob Cousy and his era, but you can't compare pre-1980s with the modern era in the NBA. He was being guarded by plumbers and firemen.
Ooh. Ooh.
And Bob Cousy, 6-time NBA champion, said, I guess Wilt Chamberlain must have fought fires as well.
Which, you know,
it's always a slippery slope, and you compare eras. It's always difficult to do that. All right, that's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Maverick Baseball, Mav St. Edwards, today at 3:00 on the Team Sports Network. Have a great day.